Well, welcome to Two Rivers Bible Church this morning. We're so glad and excited that you got here today to worship with us. As I was preparing for today's message, I heard this funny story and I wanted to share it with you. It was this elderly lady who was coming to church and she, as she walked in, the greeter met her at the door and said, "Let me help you to get a seat." And he said, "Well, where do you want to sit?" And she said, "Well, I want to sit in the front row. I said, "Well, great. I'll sit you close to the front row." It's like, "No, you don't understand. I want the front row." He says, "Ma'am, I don't know that you know what you're asking for. The preacher, he's boring, and you're very likely to fall asleep." She looked at him and said, "Do you know who I am?" He said, "No." I said, "I'm the preacher's mom." He looked at her, kind of discouraged. He said, "Do you know who I am?" He said, "No." "Good. I'll be out of here." Moms have that natural way of having their kids in a very special place. Now, there's different kinds of mom here this morning. You might be a mother of adult children, maybe have grandkids already, or you might be here, you have adult children that act like grandchildren. You might have a teenager, perhaps. You might have a child here, or you might have a child in heaven. There's different types of mothers represented here this morning. And so, but one thing is common among all mothers, and that is that at some point, you're passing the torch of your family name, or you've already passed it, or you're going to pass it. But one thing is true about most moms, and that thing that's true about most moms is that most moms struggle with this sense of inward guilt. I don't know if you've ever noticed it, ever heard moms talk about it, but it almost seems like, especially moms who have adult children, seem to have this guilt that seems to linger in there sometimes. Because deep inside, moms want their sons and daughters to connect with God. They want son and daughter to have relationship with God, just like they might have relationship with God as well. You know, I heard this story as well of a mom who goes to his son's bedroom and says, "Son, you got to get up. He's ready to go to church." And the son looks at her and says, I don't want to. I have two reasons why I don't want to." And he says, "What's those two reasons?" He says, "First of all, they don't like me there. And second of all, you know, I don't like them either." And mom looked at him and said, "Well, you better go to church. And you have two reasons why you got to go to church." He said, "What are those reasons, Mom?" And he said, "First of all, you're 51 years old." He said, "Second of all, you're the preacher." You know, it's this moms, they want to have their children somehow find connection with God. And when they don't find the connection with God, moms end up feeling very guilty. And I think part of the reason is because there's a devastating myth that moms in general buy into, but there's also a frustrating truth that we got to grab onto. And that devastating myth is this, and that is the myth that says that a godly home guarantees godly children. It's this myth that says that if I just do everything right, if I just focus on doing the right thing, I should be able to control the outcome. If I do everything right, our kids as adults will be well adjusted. They're going to have their life together. They're going to have a relationship with God. But when that doesn't happen, there's this guilt that just kind of begins to emerge in the heart of man and woman, particularly moms. And I believe that guilt is rooted in a misunderstanding of Scripture. I believe that myth that a godly home guarantees godly children is rooted in a passage that many people know and many people understand and misinterpret. And that passage is Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. I want you to turn there with me to Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6, if you brought your Bibles this morning. This is a passage that maybe you've heard before. You heard it growing up, or you parents have used it at some time or another to give yourself comfort. And that passage reads like this. It says in Proverbs 22:6, it says, "Train a child." And really the word for child there is the word for teenager. So train your teenager or your child in the way that he should go. Now, literally in the original language in the Hebrew, it should have read this way, "in the way he should go in keeping with his or her individual gift or personality bent. And when he is old, he will not turn from it." So many have looked at that passage, and many think that it says if we raise a child correctly, he or she will come back eventually. And that's the common interpretation of that passage. But I want to tell you here this morning That that's not at all what it's saying. That what it's not saying that somehow if you raise your child right, that someday, even if it's at their deathbed, they're going to connect with God. That's not what it's saying. That's not what it's saying. I want to suggest to you that what it's saying is that if we raise a child according to his or her natural bent, he or she won't turn away. Let me give you some examples. My kids, I have four kids. Hopefully we're done with four kids. Sometimes I have this, did you say no? You never know. No, wait. Hopefully it was four and done. So, but you never know, I guess, you know. But we have four kids and we always pay attention to our kids' natural bent and giftedness. I'll give an example. My oldest kid, Caleb, he is naturally gifted at giving direction and leadership. And we just have seen that in his life over the course of the last couple of years. He's the kind of kid that gets invited to go everywhere. His schoolmates are like, hey, can Caleb hang out with us? Can he come to our house? So he finds always himself in situations where people are looking to him for direction. So we decided to channel that, and we decided to give him some responsibility. So here at church, actually, once everybody leaves, he goes to the back and was getting all the trash bags and put them out in the back. Well, at some point, there was a whole bunch of kids following him, and they would follow him. And he was so annoyed because they were trying to help him. And so I set him aside. I said, Caleb, let's talk about this. He said, think about it. Man, you get free labor. Like, exercise. You know, you've got some leadership here. They're offering volunteer. Like, step up. Let them step up and give them direction. He started doing that. Guess what? He's enjoying giving direction and leadership. And then we have also Nemi, other son. And Nemi is a little bit different. He's more a little bit more in the creative, more in the hands-on kind of person. And he likes to build things. And when he was super young, you know, about 4 or 6 years old, he was already thinking about one day joining in the mission field. And he's had that dream of his, being a missionary. And it's not because he's a pastor's kid that he has that vision, but because we've never really encouraged that. But since he was real young, I want to be in the mission field, Dad. I want to be in the mission field. And he says, not only do I want to be in the mission field, I want to build stuff with my hands. And so throughout the course of the last couple of years, we've been training him and teaching him and giving him projects, whether it's puzzles or just building some projects out there, him using his hands. He wants to be a contractor. Arziana, who is more artistic in a way, she loves writing poetry. She loves writing songs. And her voice is not really the voice that you would go to American Idol, but she loves writing. And so we were like, you know, here's a guitar. So yesterday we gave her a guitar and said, here's a guitar, you know, just strum away. And she started strumming that guitar. And I kid you not, it must have been like 6 hours just playing with that guitar and trying to get the strum in. And she's like, Daddy, would you teach me? It's like, I only know 3 chords and that's it. I only know one song. And so I couldn't teach her much, but she was teaching herself. And by the end of the night, she came up to Marisa and I, and she was like, can I sing you guys a song? It's like, sure. She was singing, Lord, I Lift Your Name on High. And she was in beat, actually. Now, the voice was a little off, but you know, but she was right there, man. She was playing it. And so the idea here in this passage, when it says, train a child in the way he should go or she should go, according to the abilities, skills, giftedness that they have, they won't depart from that. And the idea is that my kids, as they grow older, that we are sensitive enough to their gifting, that when they grow older, they're better at it and they don't abandon that. And that's what that passage is saying here. It's not saying somehow that if you have a godly home, you're going to end up with godly kids, which is a forgotten distinction here in this passage, and that's that it's a proverb, not a promise. A proverb describes something about the world that we should know that happens generally, and a promise is a given thing. God's going to do something there. So when you ask yourself the question, for those of you moms who struggle with that, who struggle with this whole concept of my kids have abandoned the faith, my kids have left, they have not returned. When you struggle with that and you ask yourself, whose fault is it? Before you start saying that it's your fault, I want you to realize that it's not your fault. That according to Scripture, it is their fault. I want to show you that in Ezekiel 18:20. It says, the soul who sins is the one who will die. And then notice here in this next verse, it says, the son will not share in the guilt of the father, nor will the father share in the guilt of the son. Important distinction there. It says, the righteousness of the righteous man will be credited to him, and the wickedness of the wicked will be charged against him. So what is it saying? It's saying, hey, listen, parents, If your child has rebelled against God, has just chucked away the faith, they're doing their own thing, they're not returning, it's their fault, it's not your fault. And sure, parenting comes with influence, and we can influence a child into adulthood, but you can't control the outcome. You can't control the outcome. So parents, if you have a rebellious child, I just want to let you know this morning, let your guilt be diminished. May you find freedom today in that truth. That ultimately, from God's perspective, we are responsible for our own choices. We are responsible for our own choices. And so we come back to a frustrating truth. And I say frustrating because when you hear this truth, you will find much frustration. And this truth is this, is parents have great influence, but not ultimate control. Parents have great influence, but not ultimate control. No matter what you say, they will have the final say. We can influence them. Even if you look at Genesis 3, we see that rebellion happens even in the most perfect of environments. You remember Adam and Eve? No sin in the world. Little sin entered the world. They didn't have internet. They didn't have, you know, NC-17 movies. They didn't have any bad friend influences. And yet what happened with Cain? As he got jealous of his brother, he just struck him, didn't he? Rebellion. Rebellion happened. Even in the perfect environment, and that's because we can influence, we have much influence, but we can't control the outcome. We can't determine how our kids are going to function and be and turn out to be. So what do we do? What do we do? I want you to go to Proverbs 21:31. Proverbs 21:31. It's a great passage for you to remember and may even commit to memory. And it says this, the horse is made ready for the day of battle. For the day of battle. But victory rests with the Lord. Now don't miss out on this passage. It says, you prepare the horse for ready for battle. One day it will go into battle. But God controls the victory. And I think that principle, you can apply it also in parenting. You can apply it to helping your grandkids as well. And it's this idea that you can prepare for battle. You can prepare your kids. You can give them everything that God has called you to give them for his honor and his glory. But at the end of the day, they will make their own choices at some point. At some point, they will make their choices in what they want to do with their life, what their destiny is going to be, what kind of course they're going to charter. What we do is we try our best and we let God take care of it. I'm going to give you 5 ways to increase your odds. 5 ways to increase your odds of success. Now, notice I said to increase them, not to guarantee them, but I'm going to give you 5 principles, 5 things that hopefully will help you as you parent, as you help your kids parent, your grandkids. And these principles, by the way, folks, they apply beyond parenting. They can be applied in the marriage level. They can be applied in other levels. So, and this is the first way that you can increase your odds of success. And the first way is this, fight for a strong marriage. Fight for a strong marriage. It's easy to fall in love. It's easy. No simpler thing there is than to fall in love, but it is hard to keep together, isn't it? It's easy to have those butterflies when you see someone, and it's so easy to just get caught up in the moment, but it's so hard. It's so hard to stay together, isn't it? It's a challenge. But you got to fight for a strong marriage. And by the way, folks, you got to fight right here with each other, for each other, not against each other. And you're fighting for this strong marriage. And your family, it's you and your spouse. It's not you, your spouse, and Billy Bob Joe Sam, your kids. It's not that. You know, they're secondary in the family. It's you and your spouse, and then come the kids. Never forget that. Never allow your kids to be central, to be the number one, numero uno. Never allow that to happen. Your number one is your spouse, and that's it. And then your kids get invited. You invite them into your relationship, into your family. We tell that to our kids all the time. So don't forget, kids, you're invited into our family. Because one day our kids will leave. They're going to leave. They're not going to be 51 in my house. I'm not going to allow that. They'd be lucky if they're 19 in my house. They're going to leave at some point. But my wife, we're going to be there. I don't ever want to prioritize my kids primary over my own spouse, because eventually they will leave, folks. And when they leave and the dust settles, the nature, scope, and depth of your relationship will be put to the test. Did you build it during those critical years when they were young? Or did you squander it? Don't let the kids be the center of the family. I want you to go to Malachi chapter 2, verse 15. Malachi chapter 2, verse 15. This is talking to Malachi is talking in regards to marriage, and he says, "Has not the Lord made them one in flesh and spirit? They are his. And why one? Because he was seeking." What is he seeking? Say it with me. What? Godly offspring. Say it with me again. Godly offspring. See, I made man and woman to be together, to be one. And the reason I have them, I want them to be one, is because I want godly kids. So guard yourself in your spirit and do not break faith with the wife of your youth. And so here Malachi puts forth this argument that says, stay together, fight for each other's marriage, stay together, don't divorce. Now, there's some cases where you have to go there, and there's, you know, in some cases God understands when a person has to make that choice. But in general, God wants unity. He doesn't want separation and divorce. He wants it to be together. And it's not so much for the sake of the couple, it's for the sake of the kids. The sake of the kids. The greatest gift that you could give your child is to have a strong faith in the Lord. Greatest gift you could give him. Because children will catch your relationship with God before you can teach it to them. Have you noticed that? Like, kids, they do what you do, not what you say. It's the same thing, folks. The best gift you could give them is to give them a walking relationship, you know, with the Lord. Fight for your strong marriage. Number two, model respect for authority. Model respect for authority. Respect for authority is the key to spiritual obedience. It's the key for spiritual obedience. If children can't obey God, or can't obey you today, they sure won't be able to obey God tomorrow. You are here, flesh and bones, and if your kid can't bring honor and respect to you and your spouse today, then when that subtle voice of the Holy Spirit says, don't do this, don't do that, watch out. Why would they listen to that? Why would they listen to a God they can't see, or they can't even honor a person that they see themselves? You know, we see it all the time. We have a tendency to protect our kids, don't we? We have a tendency, when there's unfair circumstances or difficult, challenging situations, the first response from most parents is to do what? Is to protect them. We see it all the time. We see it in sports, right? Little Johnny didn't get to participate in baseball. Wait a minute. No. He's got to play. You start hounding the coach like, you got to do it. And all the while, kid is looking at you, seeing how you're hounding the coach. Or teachers. You know what I'm talking about, teachers, right? You give that B or C, or what's worse, a D or an F, and you know that child deserves it, and you give that grade. And then who comes into that door during your work hours pointing that finger? It's Mama Bear just got awoken. And she comes in there, points a finger at you and says, you should have given him or her this grade. And they demand it. And yet all the while, little boy, little girl's watching. And they're learning something. And they're learning that it's acceptable for you to just spit on authority. I think that's why King Solomon, when he looked at his son, he said this in Proverbs 24:21. It says, fear the Lord and the king, my son, and do not join with the rebellious, for those two will send sudden destruction upon them, and who knows what calamities they can bring. And it's saying, basically what King Solomon is saying is like, watch out, you don't join all these rebels and start rebelling against God and start rebelling against God's anointed, or God's person that he's instituted as a leader. Because when you do that, things don't go well. So even us as adults, we got to model authority and respect for authority. And just speaking here for the dads or grandparents, demand honor of your kids when they're young, and you will get it when they're old. Honor from your kids. In Ephesians 6, it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother." I was asking my kids the other day, I got them aside, and I said, "Kids, what is the fastest way to get me to get off my chair and coming straight at you guys?" They're like, "When you disrespect mom." It's like, yeah. Just want to encourage you, husbands, especially, when your kids are dishonoring to your bride, when they just give her the imaginary finger by being disrespectful, you should be up out of that chair and you should get in front of your kid's face and say, "You will not disrespect my wife. You will not disrespect her." It's an important lesson that they've got to learn, that it's you and her and then the kids. Number three, you got to put character over performance. You got to put character over performance. Solomon, the prophet of the day, he was looking for a king for Israel, and God had sent him on a quest to find him. And he's looking at all these different candidates, potential candidates. And then finally, God has this moment, aha moment with him, where he speaks to him about what's important. And in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 7, we see a glimpse of that conversation. It said, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things man looks at.'" Well, what does he look at? "Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the" what? Help me with this word. At the what? At the heart. Say it with me again. Where? The heart. But yet in this culture, we have this pressure from culture to highlight performance. Not to highlight character, honesty, integrity, hard work, faith in God. Those things are not present in this culture. This culture tells you, no, highlight performance. Get that grade or else. Go to that school, not the other. Go in this one. Get this type of person. Make that team. It's all performance driven. And no wonder we're at where we're at as a culture. It's because we've exchanged character with performance. We have all these expectations, unreasonable, from our kids. You know, a kid that might not have a chance at football or soccer or basketball, we know they don't have a chance, and yet we push him and push him and push him, perform, 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 perform. And then one day they're like, "I don't want to perform anymore. I'm done." Focus on character. All those, even sports activities, they're a vehicle to develop character. See it for what they really are for. They're a vehicle to develop character. You can learn so much character through sports, but don't get so caught up in it that you start performance driven. Number four, take a genuine interest in their world. Take a genuine interest in their world. I want you to go to Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3 says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interest, but also to the interest of others." You know who that others is, or who it includes? It includes your kids. It includes your kids. That somehow we got to find a way to be interested in what they're doing. Isn't that what Jesus did? Isn't that what he did when God took on flesh, the incarnation? You know, when he got flesh and he walked our walk and he talked our talk. And now what do? We connect with him because he first connected with us. You know, if the kid is into it, learn about it. Do everything in your power to learn about it, even if it's a boring subject. Even if it's a boring subject. Boy, this last week got a taste of what that would look like when the kids wanted me to go to a snake farm with a school trip. And I was thinking, oh, the last thing I want to do is take off a day and go see snakes. They're all about the same, right? They all slither. They all just kind of do the same thing, stick out their tongue. No difference. You know, some has diamondbacks. The other ones have, they're black. Some of them are albino, you know, and you know, which is, you know, it's kind of weird, really. But, you know, you see all these snakes. Once you've seen one, you've seen them all. And you have a backyard. I've seen a couple. So I'm like, you know, I could do that for free. Well, anyway, well, I decided under Marisa's encouragement, it's like, I think they really would enjoy that if you can make at least one trip, maybe two over the course of the year. And so finally I was like, yeah, I think I should. Well, guess what? We went to that snake farm. And you know what? Like, they didn't even hang out with me. I was just kind of walking around. And they were hanging out with their friends. And I'm thinking, man, this is not cool. Like, I look like this guy who's just by himself with a whole bunch of little kids. Like, not a good picture, you know? And so they're all just kind of walking around. They're doing all this stuff. And it wasn't until the next day that they just couldn't stop talking about it. And they're like, Dad, do you remember we saw this? And do you remember when that goat took out the food from my hand? And do you remember when that goat, you know, hit me right in the side? I was like, yeah, that was funny. It was like, yeah, well, it wasn't at the time. You know? And so we're talking these conversations, and they're having a blast, and they're really having fun. And yet all the while I'm thinking, I didn't do anything. I just showed up. I just showed up. It took enough interest to actually be there. And boy, did I pay the price for it, because I didn't get to work until about 4 p.m, which meant that I didn't go back home from my office until 2 a.m. And then the next day I had an elder meeting at 6. But boy, that price that was paid, it was well worth it. It was well worth it. They can't stop talking about it. I'm thinking, they're just snakes. That's it. And they had hyenas. I don't know how that, you know, hyenas and lions. I'm like, that was a snake farm. You got to take interest in what they're doing. What are they like, you know? What's their natural bent? What's their personality? What do you think they're good at and gifted at that you can come alongside of and say, I want to help you in that? Let me help you become all that God has intention for you to become. But guess what? You got to have time with them. You know how kids spell love? T-I-M-E, time, time. Lastly, the fifth way to prepare and to begin that process is to pick your battles. Pick your battles. Everything is not of equal importance. Let me take you to Colossians chapter 3, verse 21. We see that demonstrated there. It says, fathers, or mother, you can add mothers, fathers or mothers, do not embitter your children. Or they will become, what? Say it with me. Discouraged. It's like, don't embitter your kids, you know. Don't embitter them, because they might become discouraged. Pick your battles, especially when they're teenagers. Pick your battles. Let them win a couple. Don't win the battle at the expense of the war you're waging with this culture. Pick your battles wisely. In other words, don't push too hard. Too much. Watch out. I got a glimpse at how this would look like firsthand this 2 weeks ago. My kids wanted to, I didn't register them for baseball. I was wiped out after basketball. We did basketball. So I told the kids, no way. I'm going to pass out or die of a heart attack if I do this. So I said, no, but I had to compromise. And the compromise was get him a bat, a glove, you know, two gloves and a baseball. Well, I wasn't thinking. I should have thought it through. I mean, we don't have a big backyard. And so I told the kids, whatever you do, like, don't do this near a window. Well, guess what they did? They did it near a window. And here they were pitching. Nemi's pretty good at pitching. He did that pitch. Caleb is pretty good at hitting the pitch. And so he hit it. And all of a sudden, you hear this crash. And I wasn't there. I heard it through. And so it was Ziana's room. It crashed. Good thing it was double layer window, so it just hit one, broke it, shattered it. Marisa calls me really upset. You know, it's like, I'm mad. You know, I've already chewed them out. Now, I'm the disciplinarian at home. That's the way we've set it up. I'm the one who's the enforcer, the one that disciplines the kids primarily. And so, but the good thing is I was not at home at the time. So I got time to cool and think. And so I get home, and as I'm walking in, all I see is my one of my boys, just with tears. Oh, he's already crying. I'm thinking, dude, I haven't even said anything. He's already crying. He's expecting dad to just give him the seventh degree. You know, you can see it in his face. And I put it down on my knee, on one of my knees. I said, guys, man, you have a memory for a lifetime, don't you? And they were like, yes. I was like, one day you're going to look back and you're gonna be talking to each other. You're going to be talking how mom got angry at you, which is rightfully so. And you're going to be talking about how, you broke the first window. And they're like, yes. And that's it. I said it in a normal tone. At that point, I didn't scold them. They had already been scolded. And I said, you'll have to pay 50% of the window, which they're kids. They're like, oh, we already broke. We're in negative numbers. But at that moment, what I thought about is, like, listen, they've already got it from mom. Like, what do they need? Do I need to create another battle? Do I need to just grill them? Do I need to make sure that now both of them are crying? I mean, what do I do? And at that point, I decided that it wasn't a battle worth waging. That one day they would look back and remember that we gave them grace. We could have just laid it on him. I don't know what kind of battles you're waging. I don't know where you're at in life, whether it's with a teenager or a preteen or a child. But is that battle worth it? You're engaged in a war with the culture. And don't forget that. Pick your battles. Now, talking about battles, we understand this morning that many of you women are either engaged in battle, will be engaged in battle in the future, or have been already. You already have your wounds already. You're older now. You're like, man, good thing my kids now are now waging in that battle so they can learn, so they can see, what I went through. So what I want to do in the next couple of moments, I want to invite the elders to come up here and the worship team as well.